They had treated Allied prisoners of war with brutality, employed slave labor, and launched suicide attacks instead of surrendering. They had forced as many as 200,000 Korean women to serve as prostitutes in military brothels. They had killed almost 1 million Chinese civilians with chemical and biological weapons. They had killed millions of other civilians in China, Burma, Korea, Singapore, Malaysia, Cambodia, Vietnam, and the Philippines. War crimes driven by the Japanese belief in their own racial superiority. At first, the United States conducted only precision bombing raids on Japan, but heavy cloud cover and high-altitude winds made it difficult to hit industrial targets. On the night of March 9, 1945, the Army Air Forces tried a new approach. American planes struck Tokyo with 2,000 tons of bombs containing napalm and jellied gasoline. Although a major industrial area was destroyed, the real targets were block after block of Japanese buildings made of wood, paper, and bamboo. Within hours, the firestorm consumed one quarter of the city. It killed about 100,000 civilians and left about 1 million homeless. This was truly, in the words of historian John W. Dower, war without mercy. The firebombing of Tokyo wasn't condemned by President Roosevelt. On the contrary, it was soon followed by the firebombing of Nagoya, Osaka, Kobe, Kawasaki, and Yokohama. By the middle of June, the United States had laid waste to Japan's six leading industrial cities. Then American planes launched incendiary attacks on dozens of smaller cities. The level of destruction varied considerably. About one quarter of Osaka was destroyed by fire, one third of Kawasaki, more than half of Kobe. Toyama, a city on the Sea of Japan with chemical plants and a population of about 125,000, was hit the hardest. After a nighttime raid by B-29 bombers, the proportion of Toyama still standing was an estimated 0.5%. As Japanese cities vanished in flames, Leo Szilard began to have doubts about the atomic bomb. He had been the first to push hard for its development in the United States, but he now opposed its use against Japanese civilians. In June 1945, Szilard and a group of scientists at the University of Chicago sent a report to the leadership of the Manhattan Project asking that the power of nuclear weapons be demonstrated to the world at an appropriately selected uninhabited area. A nuclear attack upon Japan, they contended, would harm the reputation of the United States, make it difficult to secure international control of this new means of indiscriminate destruction, and start a dangerous arms race. But the die had been cast. A committee of presidential advisors had already decided that a public demonstration of an atomic bomb was too risky, because the weapon might not work. That Japan should not be given any warning of a nuclear attack for much the same reason. That the bomb should be aimed at a war plant surrounded by workers' housing, and that the goal of the bombing would be to make a profound psychological impression on as many workers as possible. The ideal target of the atomic bomb would be a large city that had not yet been firebombed, so the effects of the new weapon could be reliably assessed. The first four choices of the president's target committee were Kyoto, Hiroshima, Yokohama, and Kokura. Secretary of War Henry Stimson insisted that Kyoto be removed from the list, arguing that the city had played too central a role in Japanese art, history, and culture to be wiped out. Nagasaki took its place. The day after the Trinity test, Szilard and more than 68 other Manhattan Project scientists signed a petition addressed to the president. It warned that using the atomic bomb against Japan would open the door to an era of devastation on an unimaginable scale and place American cities in continuous danger of sudden annihilation. The petition never reached the president, and even if it had, it probably wouldn't have changed his mind. Franklin Roosevelt had never told his vice president, Harry Truman, about the Manhattan Project or the unusual weapon that it was developing. When Roosevelt died unexpectedly on April 12, 1945, Truman had the thankless task of replacing a beloved and charismatic leader during wartime. The new president was unlikely to reverse a nuclear policy set in motion years earlier, at enormous expense, because a group of relatively unknown scientists now considered it a bad idea. Truman's decision to use the atomic bomb was influenced by many factors, and the desire to save American lives ranked near the top. An invasion of Japan was scheduled for November 1st. Former President Herbert Hoover warned Truman that such an invasion would cost between 500,000 and 1 million American lives. At the War Department, it was widely assumed that American casualties would reach 500,000. During the recent Battle of Okinawa, more than one-third of the American landing force had been killed or wounded, and a full-scale invasion of Japan might require 1.8 million American troops. While meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff in June 1945, Truman expressed the hope of avoiding an Okinawa from one end of Japan to the other. Unlike most presidents, Truman had first-hand experience of battle. During the First World War, half of the men in his infantry division were killed or wounded during the Meuse-Argonne Offensive. Standing amid piles of dead American soldiers, the sergeant of his platoon had yelled at the survivors, "Now, you'll believe you're in a war." Truman took no pleasure in the deaths of Japanese civilians, but he preferred them to the deaths of young American servicemen. Atomic bombs, he decided, would be dropped on Japan as soon as they were ready. The Trinity test had been preceded by weeks of careful preparation, and every effort had been made to control the outcome. The device had been slowly and patiently assembled. The wiring and explosives had been repeatedly checked. The tower had been built, the location of the test chosen, and each step of the countdown arranged as part of an elaborate scientific experiment. Turning an experimental device into an operable weapon presented a new set of challenges. Atomic bombs had to be dropped somehow, and American air crews had to survive the detonations. B-29 bombers were secretly retrofitted so that nuclear weapons would fit inside them, and pilots were secretly recruited to fly these silverplate B-29s. They practiced dropping dummy bombs, then banking steeply to escape the blast.